You're listening to the Illustration Hour podcast, an interview podcast where I talk to illustrators, art directors, and agents about the craft and business of illustration. My name is Julia Dufossé, and I'm an editorial and commercial illustrator based in Chicago. And I'm chatting with creatives within the world of illustration to learn about their process, the challenges they faced along the way, and how to succeed as an illustrator today. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another week of the Illustration Hour. I'm your host, Julia Dufossé. And this week, I had to switch my schedule around a little bit because of some technical difficulties. But I do have a brand new interview for you today, nonetheless. But before I introduce my guest, I have an important announcement regarding an upcoming show that I'm hoping to turn into a more interactive Q&A with your help. I'll be interviewing Matthew LeBaron, the CEO and founder of an agency called Much Creative. Much Creative is an NY-based agency that represents and consults with creatives from around the world. Matthew has been representing and working with artists and illustrators for over a decade now. And he's recently launched a new portal called Collab Plus, where freelancers can ask for project help and representation on a project-to-project basis. It's really exciting stuff, and we'll be talking more about that. But because Matthew has so much experience and knowledge about the illustration industry and things that I don't necessarily know much about, like representation, contracts, and negotiation, I thought I would turn to you and let you submit questions to Matthew. You can ask all those questions that you may have about the industry in general, agents, representation, contracts, and negotiation. I just ask that you submit your question before Thursday, the 17th of October. Here's how you can submit your questions. You can submit them via Instagram. You can reply to any of my stories about this coming episode, or you can send me a direct message directly on Instagram at Illustration Hour, or you can shoot me an email at illustrationhourpodcast@gmail.com with the subject line Q&A and share your question that way. Obviously, I won't be able to get to all the questions that have been asked, but I will do my best to get your questions answered or to combine questions whenever possible when I talk with Matthew next weekend. Okay, so let's talk about this week, because today I am talking with Cathal Duan, who is a Irish freelance illustrator. He's, in fact, the first Irish illustrator I've talked to on the podcast, which is exciting. Okay, so Cathal, you can find him at Cathal Duan on Instagram. That's I'm probably mispronouncing his name again, but it is at CathalDuane on Instagram. And then his website is CathalDuan.com. Okay, so Cathal is an Irish illustrator based in France and represented by the agency Us Folk. His work is bold, modern, and textured, and it consists of highly figurative forms, smart compositions, and joyful color schemes. Cathal has worked on commercial and editorial projects with clients like The Atlantic, the BBC, Creative Ireland, the Association of Illustrators, and the Belfast City Council. In this conversation, we chat about what you should expect when starting out in illustration, why you should set realistic goals, and how long you should wait before you decide you're not good enough. We chat about the importance of making work, even if it's just personal projects, to build out your portfolio. And Cathal explains how he got started gradually, and if you listen to the interview, that word is key, and how he gradually built out his network and client list over time. So we talk about starting out, making work, developing your skills and your client list. And we also talk about how to protect yourself when you do get clients. We talk about why Cathal thinks you should write a boilerplate contract for yourself to ensure your work is compensated fairly and when you should negotiate. We also talk about separating your work life from your life as a freelancer and what to do when you're starting out and you feel alone, lost, or just not confident. So if you're just starting out, this episode is really for you. And if you're already established, I think that you'll be able to get tons of insight and inspiration from this conversation. I really liked Cathal's positive and down-to-earth approach to topics like self-promotion and getting clients. And I really enjoyed our discussion, and it reminded me of the value of patience and of setting realistic expectations for yourself. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Cathal Duan. So, Cathal, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm really happy to have you. I really like what you do. And I think you're my first Irish illustrator on the show.
Hey, I'm honored.
Yeah. Can you, first off, I usually ask people to say exactly how they describe what they do. How do you usually present yourself, I guess, if someone asks you what you do?
I just say illustrator or commercial illustrator. I don't feel any need to put anything else onto it. I'm happy enough being called that.
Yeah.
And if they don't know what that is.
No artist, no designer, no.
No. I'm happy enough being called an illustrator because I think the word artist has a bit of baggage that I don't really feel the need to carry, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I understand. So I know you went to, I think you went to university to study fine art, right?
I studied in GMIT in Galway in the west of Ireland. And I specialized in sculpture, funnily enough, but didn't really do much with that. And to be honest, I'm not really made for the academic world, you know, so.
Uh-huh.
Didn't really get much out of it. Not that there was anything wrong with it. It's just, like, I went to college straight after secondary school. And I think mm-hmm. I was just kind of immature. And I just had a very, not a great approach to education. Like, you know, I viewed the lecturers as teachers. So, you know, and grades were more important than the actual work, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, and yeah, I'm not the best student in the world. And yeah, I just didn't really, I don't really fit in that kind of environment.
So why did you pick fine art at that time?
I'll be honest, where I come from, there isn't a lot of people kind of pursuing creative careers. So I didn't really know about design or illustration, really. So somebody said, you know, you're good at drawing, you know, maybe do art. So I was like, I'll give it a go. And yeah, like, I learned about illustration after college you know.
Which is quite common.
Yeah. So like, I don't regret going to, like, mm-hmm. and doing fine art and specializing in what I specialize in, because, you know, it kept me in the game. So to speak, you know, cause like, if I didn't do that, I might have like focused in or tried to study something else and I mightn't be doing illustration at all. And, you know, I think I'd regret that more than, you know, going to a course that didn't really fit me.
Yeah.
So
were you drawing all throughout childhood, basically, before you decided to go to university?
Yeah. Like, that was pretty much all I did. You know, because, like, when I was growing up, it was mostly cartoons and comics and stuff that I was drawn to, and I just loved everything about them. So I was just constantly trying to copy, you know, Spider-Man and all that. And like, I actually thought that I was going to try and do comic book illustration until I realized that, no, it's not for me either. So yeah, like even things like the, you know, the Super Nintendo game boxes. You know, like they're really colorful and they're really, you know,
yeah,
there was a lot going on, and you know, you play the game and it would look nothing like the cover, but you know, like loads of those covers stick out in my memory. And I was even actually looking up some of them recently, and I was like, oh, maybe that's why I use the colors I use, you know, like it,
yeah,
it actually,
yeah,
something got, you know, seeped in when I was that age, that kind of.
I can see that in your colors definitely now, like there's, yeah, the vivid kind of,
like, yeah, like
yeah.
So yeah, I have been drawn pretty much since I was a child, and did art in secondary school, did fine art in college, and you know, I did a, you know, I was doing still doing a good bit of drawing in there, but I wasn't focusing on it until I left college. And then I kind of had to ask myself a question. I was like, am I still going to try and do something with this? Or, you know, I was actually looking up cooking, 1 year culinary courses. You know, I was like, maybe I'll just try and be a cook. Why not? I ended up getting an artist residency in Iceland for a month. And
Iceland, okay.
Yeah, so I was over there at Nez in, what's the name of the place? I think it's Skagastrand. It's okay. A really cool residency there. It's lovely. And that kind of just...
Well, you know, Iceland for a month, I'm sure, is lovely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was unbelievable. Like,
but then it sort of starts to get... I mean, no offense to Iceland, but I would imagine living there is a challenge sometimes.
I'd imagine so. It's very dark for very long.
Yeah. But, I'm attracted to, like, the look of the nature. Yeah. I've never been, and I would like to go, but living there seems like it would be
hard. It was where we were was it's fairly isolated, but you know, it was like a fishing community kind of village place, but it's the people there were lovely, and you know, it's a fairly barren landscape, but you know, they have the northern lights. I was lucky enough to see those, and I was like,
Yeah, that is
worth something. Yeah. You
know? Yeah. And that's strange that they have an art residency in an isolated in Iceland.
Yeah, I think they have a couple. They have one in Reykjavik. I don't know what abbreviation that is. But the one I went to, like, I tried loads of different things there to, like, in terms of style, because that's when I kind of really started focusing in on illustration and trying to learn programs and stuff.
So what was the residency like? Like, when you showed up, what was the kind of, what did you do?
I just basically drew.
Yeah.
You know, and I was trying to learn Photoshop and Illustrator, and you know, there was, like, this was a good few years ago now, so I can't remember perfectly. But there was a lot of really interesting, like, artists, and like there was writers, and I think there was a writer. There was a couple of photographers, and then people more kind of leaning towards contemporary art, and a couple of performance artists and stuff. So,
so they really let you do whatever you want.
Yeah, like, it's
in a very free. Okay.
Yeah, like. Yeah. They kind of, you know, they'd obviously want something at the end of it, but you didn't have to. You know, it was kind of more just about getting, you know, people working there. Well, that was my experience of it anyway. I didn't feel any real pressure to create any big piece, but it was a really nice place to work and to kind of develop, like, processes and stuff, and think about how to approach things. So yeah
and I imagine that there weren't as many distractions.
I don't think they have spiders, so that was, you know, like they
spiders
don't have...
are pretty distracting.
Well, no, they don't have spiders, or they don't have many trees. So yeah, you just kind of walk out, and it's like,
I was thinking more like the internet. I don't know. I don't get distracted by trees, but
Maybe you haven't seen the right tree.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
No, there was internet. They have internet in Iceland.
So, but I would imagine it's not fast for some reason. I don't know. Like,
yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, depends what you're doing. I wasn't gaming, or like downloading loads of stuff.
Well, I guess I have a romantic vision of Iceland where like the internet is so slow you can't go on
you
it.
Put your,
you don't get distracted.
You put your smartphone in a bin in the airport when you get in.
Yeah.
You get it when you come home. But there's nothing wrong with less distractions. So
So after that you came back to Ireland.
I moved from Galway to Cork. Down the south, because a couple of my friends were running a studio space down there, Sample Studios, and it's still going, but the building that they were in got knocked it down. But that's another story. But the studios themselves are just moved. But I didn't stay with them long after that because I moved from Ireland. But that's kind of where I got. A lot more serious about illustration because I met a couple of illustrators and they told me what illustration was. So
Cork seems to be the kind of creative center in Ireland.
Maybe
more so than Dublin.
I think it's the same in most places. There's a community in most places, like, and it's ebbs and flows. Like sometimes it's Dublin, sometimes it's Cork, sometimes it's Galway, sometimes it's, you know, pick the place where artists are allowed to actually do things, you know, like, Cork, there is a lot going on, but there was
it's
more.
The second biggest city, right? It's a little bit smaller than Dublin or
it's the population is a good bit smaller.
Like
you probably wouldn't call it a city, you know, but
I don't know.
Like the population wouldn't be massive, but there it's a great place to live and it's a great place to, like, the artists there are really passionate and, you know, it's
I think it was where the late Tommy Ungerer
was
living, right?
Yeah, he was living in West Cork.
Is that similar or is it
West Cork
far
is,
from?
I think he was living in Kinsale, which is kind of like a seaside town.
So that's not really Cork proper?
Not it's not part of the city. But it would be like part of the county or region, you know.
But
it would be about a half an hour away. I think it was Kinsale now. I might be very wrong. But I was lucky enough to actually see him speak in Offset up in Dublin.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He was a character.
He had a personality.
He's class.
So in Cork, you joined. So did you join the studios that your friends had?
Or did you
just work out of there?
I actually just moved down to Cork to join the studios, you know, because where I was, there wasn't really much opportunity. And, you know, it was hard to find some kind of community where people were trying to, you know, any kind of creative community at the time. But, when I moved down, I did become a member of the studios. And, like, it was a pretty big studio. I think there was... At the highest, I think there was like 80 members. And there was, because the building was so big, there was other groups and other, like, I think there was a master's program from the art college was in there as well. So there was, it was like a proper hub for creativity in Cork. So when I was there, I met a couple of illustrators and they told me what illustration was and I started focusing in on that. And there's not many illustrators down in Cork. There'd be more of a community in Dublin. And that's where the group and Illustrators Ireland is. So yeah.
What sort of work did you do at Sample Studios?
Because I was only getting started, I wasn't working digitally that much, because I was teaching myself Photoshop and Illustrator, so you know, it's just, yeah, I was just mostly sketching and a lot of pencil work, and like totally different to what I do now, because you know, I didn't really know what kind of work or how to approach anything, like what kind of work I would like to do. So I was just doing anything and seeing what stuck, you know. And then I kind of started focusing on Illustrator a lot more, and I started working in vectors and that kind of clean style, which at the time was fine, because it was, you know, I was learning as I went, but you know, I'm not going to look at any of that stuff now out of, you know, shame. But yeah, and I think I was in the studios for maybe 4 years before they had to move. And you know, in that time, like that's pretty much where I started trying to be a freelance illustrator. So I, you know, was trying to learn the programs, trying to get better equipment, trying to do all that. So most of the commissions that I got while I was starting out, I did in Illustrator.
And yeah.
Like Illustrator kind of dictated how the style that I was working in, just because of the way it is, you know, it's because it's clean and all that, you know, which is fine.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Yeah, like your style kind of emerge out of working with the tool, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And when I got a graphics tablet first, that's kind of when things started kind of gelling. And like they started to kind of click together, and I was able to, like, I didn't throw, you know, everything away when I switched from Illustrator to Photoshop as my primary program. You know, I kept a lot of the sketching and shapes and how I used color, how I learned to use color, or, you know, my approach to color, I kept when I moved to Photoshop. And yeah, it started to kind of come together. It still took ages before I kind of landed on some kind of style that I was happy with. Like, it took like a couple of years, like, but things started moving a lot quicker when I made the transition from Illustrator to Photoshop with the graphics tablet.
Yeah. Do you remember why you felt like you wanted to try Photoshop? Was there something that you weren't happy with in Illustrator?
It was, I wasn't happy with the finish that I was getting, and the process I found kind of monotonous, you know. Because you're working with points and all that, your hand is moving different, you know, it didn't feel intuitive to me to, you know, to do a curve I had to twist my wrist the opposite direction, you know, it didn't really fit. And you know, when I got the graphics tablet, I started not really caring as much about kind of like little imperfections that would have bothered me in Illustrator, because you know, it's a lot more,
because you're trying to perfect a curve or
it's a lot more obvious when a point is out of place in Illustrator. But if you're using like a kind of sketchy brush, you know, it's a little bit more forgiving. But I also kind of prefer it. I kind of like the little like imperfections now. I think they're kind of nice. No.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because I guess another way that you could have gone is keep using Illustrator and then like distress it in Photoshop afterwards.
Yeah,
which some people do.
I tried to do that, and I just thought it took too long. I was like, there has to be a better way. We have the technology, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
no, I mean, I totally identify with that. I started with Illustrator too. I think it's maybe a little bit less intimidating in the beginning than Photoshop.
Yeah, I think what I found when I was learning Illustrator was, like, initially Illustrator is completely alien. just because of the pin tool.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's so counterintuitive. But once you understand the pin tool and the Pathfinder and all that, all the stuff of how, all the tools of how to make like the shapes that you need, and then you can adjust them. It's, I think it's a lot easier in the long term to use, just because,
yes,
you know,
once you get the basics, you really understand.
Yeah, you can.
The software kind of comes together. It's not very hard. Whereas Photoshop, there's like so many hidden.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how to Photoshop. I can only draw in Photoshop. You know, there's so much I don't know about Photoshop. And it's like, I don't need to know.
I think the knowledge comes much slower with Photoshop.
You have
to really like, yeah, it takes a while.
You have to dig deep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's funny how that works. I still make shapes in Illustrator because sometimes I prefer, like, I really don't enjoy the pen tool in Photoshop.
I don't even use it. If I need a kind of a vector shape, I'd use Illustrator as well. I don't use the pen tool.
Right, yeah.
Just stick to what you know sometimes. You know?
It's very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
The pen tool in Photoshop, it like makes these paths that you have to go find and create afterwards. It's like, it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah. So like your style started to emerge after you got the graphic tablet and you were able to
it still took a while to get to, like, how would I put this, like, find what I'm not comfortable drawing, but what I'm kind of drawn, for lack of a better word, what comes intuitively
yeah.
to me.
I mean, I think it's really hard to articulate those decisions and those kind of like things that you make about your style. And
yeah, it wasn't a conscious, was deliberate. It was all kind of intuitive, and every illustration or sketch that I did fed into this. So there's no one point that I can like find where it's like, that's where I found my style, you know. It's
And I mean, some people can, like, some people will tell you like that one piece is when they discovered their style or something like that. But
that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
Yeah. I would agree. I think for me, it was very gradual.
Yeah.
How were you doing with clients around that time? Were you having like,
Yeah, when I started, it was very slow, and you know, I was working as a gallery technician on the side and all that, and which was a really good job for it, because it was, you know, 3 months off, month on, 3 months off, month on, for changeovers and exhibition setups. And yeah, when I started, it was quiet. You know, I'd say same as most people get, what, like, just mainly personal projects to try and get noticed, and, you know, seeing what people are interested in and trying to get a response. And then it's all been gradual, you know. It all started out small with like local people wanting something for their store, or, you know, maybe like a Irish online publication wanted a header, you know. So it was all that kind of stuff, drips and drabs at the start, and then it all started building up, and now I'm you know, able to get away with doing freelance full time. So it was gradual. It's the word.
So
that
you started out more with local assignments, which is that's interesting.
Yeah. I kind of didn't really focus on getting clients, but at the very start, because I didn't really know how, but set myself kind of a couple of goals to kind of try and get a bit of a platform so that clients would be able to see my work. So one of the goals was become a member of Illustrators Ireland.
Yeah.
So that was get a portfolio together, get a, I think it was at the time, maybe 5 commissioned works. And then you can send in your portfolio for apply through with your portfolio then. And that's how I kind of justified the lack of clients at the start, you know, one step at a time, you know, get a bit of a platform, develop my portfolio, you know. Then I got clients from that, you know, and constantly, you know, moving forward slowly that way and setting myself realistic goals for where I was starting and how I was starting and my experience. And then, you know, that was a good few years ago now. That was maybe 6 or 7.
Yeah. So did most people come to you having seen your work, or did you do a little bit of kind of, I guess, direct outreach? Or
at the start, it would have been people just contacting me based on portfolio, because I only developed kind of the knowledge of how to like find art directors and like what kind of email to send to art directors and, you know, social media and developing, like have an Instagram account that people want to look at, you know, and that came later for me. So, well, not much later, like 2 years after starting out, I started developing that, but what's the question? Sorry, I rambled off.
I was asking about whether or not you did like direct outreach. Like, contacted people, you know, like, I don't know, like since you got a lot of local clients, did you actually like target certain people and directly talk to them or not really?
Yeah, not at the start, but like it came later that I did start doing a bit of direct. But usually they contacted me just through seeing my work somehow. Like there was no direct contact. It was all kind of indirect from them seeing my work some other way, you know?
I mean, I think that's ideal because direct kind of outreach is not, I mean, at least I don't enjoy it. I know some people do. Probably. It's something. I mean, you have to kind of sell yourself and I don't know how effective it is actually.
Yeah. I do a bit of it now. Like I wouldn't do a massive amount, but like if it's quiet period, like say it's in between commissions or something, I'd send a really short and concise email to a few art directors and see if anything happens. And if there's no reply, there's no reply, you know. But
But no reply doesn't mean unsuccessful.
No, it doesn't at all. It just means, you know, they have stuff to do, you know. But I'm not great at the old self-promotion, you know.
But,
So I keep my emails very concise. Like, here's 5 pieces of work. You know, let me know if you want to work with me.
I don't know, I'm sort of on a mission now to kind of figure out if that even really works or if it's a waste of time. I don't know.
I find that I get a lot of emails from people who don't work as art directors anymore. I'd send the email and then like 5 minutes later, go, oh yeah, I don't work there anymore. I was like,
Yeah, but sometimes they've moved to another.
Oh yeah.
Useful as well.
Yeah, it's always good to get a response. But yeah, you're dead right about, you know, no response doesn't mean they didn't see your work. It's just, you know, like I don't know when the deadlines are. I don't know what they're working on. You know, so
yeah.
You just kind of have to see what sticks. You know, but
yeah. Do you remember in the beginning when, at what moment you sort of had, I guess not a breakthrough, but the feeling that now you could really freelance 100% of the time, that people are going to come to you and continue to come to you kind of thing?
That was actually pretty recent. Like last year, but when I was still working as a gallery technician at the time, I kept noticing that I was just getting a lot of work, like illustration work, while I was working as a technician, and it wasn't feasible because it was full-time hours, and then, you know, closer to the actual show, you might be doing longer hours. So, you know, I could be doing days where, like, I'm in the gallery from 9 in the morning to 8 in the evening, and then I go home and I'm working until 2 in the morning.
That's rough.
So, and it got to a point where I had to turn down work because I didn't think I could do it, like one job, and I was like, yeah, that's pretty much, I made a decision that, yeah, it's illustration or post, you know, at this stage. So yeah, just said farewell. And
so it took at least, like, how many years for you to feel like
it would be a since good you started? Few years. I can't remember the exact dates. Like I'd probably only go from when I registered as a as a sole trader, but I think it's about 5 years, maybe.
Okay,
a little bit less.
Yeah. I think that's kind of interesting because a lot of a lot of the stories of success that we hear from illustrators, I mean, it can feel like, you know, they started out and then 2 months later they get loads of commission. They're able to start full time, and that can be, I guess that can be true.
Like it's,
but it also can be true that it takes, you know,
sometimes
4 or 5 years.
Sometimes you just have to grind, you know. It's like, it's not everybody can be in the right place at the right time, but you can always make sure that if you are, you're ready, you know. And it's, if I don't think anybody who like you're describing there, who in 2 or 3 months, you know, like they're established or whatever,
like, not established, but you know, they're getting work frequently, or
like I don't really think that a lot of them thought that that would be the case. And you know, like, so just because it worked out that way, like, good for them, that's great, but you know, the next commission might be the best one for you, like, so like, I think if you expect to be getting a lot of work after 2 or 3 months, you're kind of in for a bit of a surprise, you know. So yeah, sometimes you just have to put the head down, you know, and just grind away, you know.
Yeah. And but did you have, I mean, I'm sure during those years you had times where you felt you know, dissatisfied, but also like impatient, or maybe like also doubting yourself.
Oh yeah, definitely, you know? Like 100%. Yeah, that's, you know, that's like, I'd be lying if I said that didn't happen today, you know. It's always kind of going to be there, but it's just kind of a part of being freelance, I suppose, you know, because there's always an element of risk to it, you know. And like, if you want to like a salary, then there's, you know, jobs that you can go for, but this, yeah, you're going to be scared sometimes. Like, I get terrified sometimes, like, especially at the start, you know. I didn't know if anything was going to work, you know.
No.
And you just kind of have to plow on, and you know, it's good to talk to other illustrators as well. And that's why you know, because I think it's fairly common. It's a fairly common feeling among people, any type of freelancer, where it's like, there's kind of like this, sometimes this dread creeps in, you know, and you're like,
oh no,
will I pay a rent? You know, and but, you know, like when I was starting out, I did like a short business course, because I had to set up as a business. And the teacher there was just like, yeah, it takes roughly 5 years for every business to balance out. you know, any yeah. small business or sole trader business. So I was like, all right, so if I make it 5 years, I'll see how I'm doing. And
I think that might be a more realistic way. Else. Yeah, yeah. A more realistic way to kind of is just start yeah. out.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think you kind of have to have a bit of realism, but a lot of optimism. You know, it's, yeah, you can prepare a lot. Well, I found that I could prepare a lot more when I kind of said, okay, 5 years is, if it's not working by then it probably won't work, you know, and mm-hmm. like, I was lucky enough that it kept building gradually to the point where I, you know, I can say that it's working, you know. So, yeah. Yeah, all yeah. I can say to that is, you know, try to get the 2 or 3 months and then the great jobs out of it. But, you know, don't put any money on it. Don't bank on it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it just also, because you were talking more about the risk of the financial risk, I guess, of being freelance. But I think also in the very beginning, the confidence aspect is also something that
yeah.
is very depressing, because you can
yeah.
sort of doubt your confidence and kind of equate not getting clients right away to you not being good enough. Or
oh yeah, definitely.
You
yeah,
know,
that's I've definitely gone through that, where it's just like, ah, well, you know, not good enough, so that's why nobody wants to hire me. But there's yeah. a very good chance that they're just not seeing your work. They're just weren't seeing my work, you know, and, you know, maybe they don't have a project on that, you know, my work would suit, you know. It's, yeah, it's very easy to put all that kind of stress and pressure on yourself when you're sitting in front of the computer or yeah. in front of a sketchbook, and, you know, you don't really have any kind of real grasp of what's, like, how people, why people aren't looking at your work or asking you for yeah. commissions or not. Yeah. You know, it's easy to kind of push it all on yourself, and, you know, it's not very productive or helpful, and it'll only end up, like, yeah, quitting or being depressed.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's true, but it's also hard to not do it sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what kept you going and kind of silenced those kinds of voices when you were starting?
When I was starting out, it was just like, you know, like, I was compelled to draw, you know, like, I knew that ever since I was young, I kind of knew that I wanted to do something in this kind of field.
Yeah.
It just took me ages to realize what the field was and uh-huh. how to get there, you know. But
so you're fairly certain about the path, about the end goal, I guess.
I wasn't even certain about the end goal. I still haven't, you know, really, you know. It's just every, you know, everything that I've done has kind of fed into this direction. So, like, I haven't anything majorly planned out, you know, because when I was starting out, I didn't really know. And now I have a bit more knowledge and experience, so I can kind of plan out and have a bit more of an idea of where I wanted to go. But I don't think it was any kind of major plan at the start. It was just, I was just doing this because I really loved it. And
yeah.
Yeah, it was, I just had to figure out a way to do it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
it was in the grand scheme.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk more about drawing, because you mentioned so much that that's something you really enjoy doing. And I had that question because I know a lot of illustrators are actually quite insecure about their drawing, or, you know, they feel like they're not technically good drawers. I can definitely say that I have that insecurity sometimes.
Oh, yeah, that's...
But is it something you really enjoy doing, drawing, sketching, kind of that kind of thing?
Yeah, like, it's it's just something I find myself doing without even realizing it. You know, like I could just be sitting in a cafe or like, well, not a cafe, but, you know, somewhere else. But, and there just might be a sugar packet and I'll just find myself sketching on it with a pin. I don't even know where the pin comes from. You know, it's just like there's, yeah. You know, it's, yeah. But, yeah, like, it's, sorry, no.
Yeah, it kind of, I guess for you, it kind of happens like in a stream of consciousness kind of way.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, I do sketch a lot, but it's kind of more, kind of
spontaneous.
Yeah, spontaneous, and I don't, you know, when you lose time doing something, you know, and yeah, like that kind of happens to me a lot, especially when I'm like in the final stages of a commission sketch, say. You know, I'll just lose time doing it because I'm not even focusing on anything in any, yeah, in a very powerful way, just kind of letting it happen. And yeah, that's kind of, it's never really too like conscious for me, you know, it's just all, yeah, kind of, yeah, yeah, let it happen.
Yeah, I'd love to know more about your process when you get commission or even just for personal projects, but like, I guess from start to finish, like, what do you do to get ideas? How do you usually work? And then, yeah, how do you usually deliver? What sort of things do you usually deliver in the end?
Yeah, it kind of depends on what it is. Like, say for an editorial, I'd go through the article and I'd pick out words that kind of I find visually striking and, you know, that kind of conjure up an image in my head straight away. And yeah, that kind of tied to the theme of the piece. And, yeah, I'd start doing like really rough pencil sketches. And, I'd aim for about 3 rough concepts and then I'd start working on Photoshop. Like pretty much as quick as I could, because I kind of enjoy that, like the using the tablet and Photoshop. I like how to use it, you know, the hotkeys and stuff. I find it a lot faster for me.
Yeah. And the ability to guess, have layers and,
yeah,
move things around and
like,
yeah,
even just the opacity, just layering sketches over sketches, like, just to compare them, you know, I just to see which kind of composition would works a little bit better. I don't know why. I don't even know if it helps, but I enjoy doing it and trying to figure out, like, maybe finding a happy middle ground between 2 compositions that I like, you know. And, you know, and I also like being able to use and play around with color, like, while I'm, yeah, sketching. Like, not set a color palette in stone straight away. What for editorials, but for like more commercial things, I would have a stronger idea of color palettes and stuff.
But, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but sort of experimenting with colors at an early,
yeah,
early,
yeah,
stage.
Like, yeah, that would kind of be a big thing while I'm doing it. And that's why I try and get to Photoshop as quick as possible, you know, so I don't spend a lot of time sketching in pen or pencil or anything. Like, it's, mm-hmm, it's all quick, really quick sketches, responding to the, yeah, words that I select and stuff. And yeah, then after that it's just, you know, send off. I have to feedback, revise, and once it's signed off, send off. You know, it's pretty much the usual process for me.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a lot your drawing on a tablet. I was wondering if what kind of tablet you're drawing on usually.
Just using a Wacom. It's actually quite small. I have to upgrade it. It's she's been with me for a while. she's that lots of
is
scrapes.
It like the, it's not the like screen ones, like the legit Cintiq kind of thing.
It's one of those. Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's ready for the museum now at this stage, but it's paid for itself. So that's it's all that counts.
So it's like a big Cintiq.
No, it's actually it's one of the smaller models. But like just because when I bought it, it was kind of for I didn't have enough room for a big one, and it was easier to travel
carry around.
With, yeah, travel with, and even though you still need
those
two
big
plugs.
The 24 like Cintiq, like they look nice,
yeah.
But good luck traveling with that. Yeah,
big backpack.
Yeah, So and then I was also going to ask you what brushes you typically use in Photoshop.
I bought the Kyle T. Webster brushes before they became a part of Photoshop.
Now he makes all the brushes
he's,
for free for Creative Cloud.
Yes, yeah. I don't know the names. I use about 23 brushes, and they'd be like my go-to brushes, but
that's quite a lot.
Just messing around with textures and stuff, but I don't know the names or anything. I just kind of like whenever I like a brush, I just tap a few times and they all end up at the top, you know. So
but so are they mostly like painting brushes or like
there'd be
you don't really know,
there'd be a lot more like pencil and sketch brushes, and then there'd be some like bristle brushes, and then kind of more like textured based.
Yeah.
Like I'd only use like four of them pretty regularly, but it depending on the finish that I'm going for, like I kind of have go-to brushes then based on that, you know, if I want a kind of more textured or, you know, painterly finish, then I'll go for, I know where to go, you know, but Kyle T. Webster brushes would be the ones that I use.
I mean, his brushes are really nice.
Yeah, they're brilliant.
Yeah. And then usually just finish the sketch in Photoshop and just, or I mean, finish the drawing in Photoshop.
The whole process then for me would be like, once I bring it into Photoshop, it's unless the client needs something else, then it's all finished in Photoshop for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever, did you ever try using Procreate or?
Not yet, but I might. At some stage, I do have to upgrade in a big way.
You mean you have to upgrade your tablet or?
It's working grand. It's just, you know, it's getting along. It's you know, I have to.
Yeah.
So I might actually look into getting an iPad and Procreate, because I heard, like, I've seen some pieces and they're great coming out of it, and it's like you might as well give it a go, you know. Just
I do think it's quite different from Photoshop if you don't use all the functionalities of Photoshop.
Yeah,
if
that's,
you just use it,
that's one thing that I would be a bit hesitant to go for, because like I know all the hotkeys and I have like a way to sit, and you know, it's it wouldn't be just changing programs, it would be changing like the actual, like how I work. And I think I'd have to do it if I was going to like go down that route, I'd have to do it in a, like a period where it's a bit more quiet and I have time to get used to the program.
Yeah.
You know?
And of course, Adobe just came out with their own like software like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, like the Adobe Fresco thing, which is supposed to be a Photoshop for the iPad.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't think it's quite there, but I don't know. it's not Photoshop, definitely, but it's, you know, some of Kyle T. Webster's brushes are in there, and you can move Photoshop brushes in there. So it has that kind of aspect to it that it approximates Photoshop in a way.
Yeah,
but,
like, because I haven't actually used it yet. Like, I don't know how it would actually even fit my style. Just because, like, I use a lot of overlays, and like I don't know what's not included in, like, say, Procreate or this Fresco, the new Fresco program. So that would be another thing that I'd have to consider if I was to go that way. But a part of me is kind of like I'm because now I have a bit more of a like set space to work in. You know, I'm not moving around as much. Like I kind of like being able to just leave it there. You know, like leave the tablet there, and like that's like it's still in the house, but like I don't move it anywhere. I don't. So that's kind of like in my head, you know, for, you know,
work.
Yeah, for work-life balance. You know, it's good to be able to just like put it down and just leave it there, and that's
that's a good point.
That's my work day done. And I think if I had an iPad, I'd be on the couch and I'd have the iPad, and when I should be just, you know, relaxing a bit, you know. So
yeah, that's a good point, and that's definitely true. I think I have one, and it definitely does that. You will end up like doing things that are not work on it, so it starts to become blurred, and I think not a very good thing, actually.
Yeah, like I kind of like having a fairly defined line between like where I work and how I work and the times that I work, because when I start out, I didn't have well like defined lines between those things, so
yeah,
like you just get burned out, you know. You just get I just got wrecked, you know, and you know you'd be working like late into the night for a personal project, and it's like just go to bed, you know. You don't need to do it in the morning, you know. It's fine.
Yeah.
So I right now I need to be able to close the door on the studio when I have to, like, you know, keeping hours, office hours, you know. That's kind of important to me at the moment. So
you have a studio in your apartment or in your house?
I have a little workspace, it's, does the job. It's nice.
So tell me more about your routine. Like you said, you keep office hours. Do you get up at the same time every day and just start working at the same time? Or
we have a dog, so I walk the dog at about 6:30 or 7 in the morning, and then you know, that's, she's great for keeping me on time.
Keeps you honest.
She does. So walk for about an hour and I get back. Usually start working about 8:30, and then I kind of like settling into it. I don't like going straight into illustration or anything. I kind of like start with like office things if I have, you know, like I do accounts and stuff, and emails if I have to send them. I do all that stuff at the start just to settle in, and then I just start on whatever commissions I have or if there's any kind of projects I'm working on. I set up like a kind of a rough schedule of like I'll do 2 hours of this, an hour of that, 2 hours of this, and just because if I didn't do that, I'd either procrastinate or completely put off other things that I have to do. So I try and keep pretty not strict, you know, like, but I find a routine helps me get the work done, you know. That's stay focused on it, you know. That's kind of the most important thing for me.
I think that's the, when do you make your schedule usually? Do you make it
the night before, just because it's done then, you don't have to think about it.
I find that if I wait till the morning, then it never happens.
I'd just forget. I'd forget the things that I thought about doing the day before. Just draw.
It's true. It's not a good tactic. I know recently we were talking about this before the show, but you have been working with more of a public arts commission. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm working with two other artists on a public arts commission in a secondary school or a high school in Cork. And it's still ongoing, so we're not finished yet. But the basic idea behind the whole thing was we'd do workshops with the students, and like drawing workshops and like kind of graphics workshops, but we didn't have much time with each group, so we just had one hour class. So that was, we just had to deal with that. And then from the work, from the sketchbooks, from the workshops, we'd create a series of screen prints, and then from the screen prints, we'd develop kind of more basic graphics based on the screen prints, and then so on. And yeah, so that was it. It's coming along. It's coming together. It's really nice working in that kind of way. I don't usually get an opportunity to do many workshops and kind of work in a way that's
collaborative, I guess.
Yeah. Especially to that scale where, you know, I think there was like a couple of hundred kids maybe over the few days that we did the workshops. And so we had a ton of sketchbooks, which was cool. They do some mad stuff. It was brilliant. And so
did you tell them what to draw, or were they
told? We gave them kind of rough outlines. We started off with a 5-second sketch, and then like little exercises like the blind drawn and drawn with your left hand, you know, just so that they don't feel like nobody can draw good with their wrong hand, you know. So there was nobody was being self-conscious, you know. That was our main goal at the start, and we'd shout out words that they'd have to try and draw, you know, like we'd ask them to draw a dog in 5 seconds and all that. And then we'd we'd just kind of develop that, and like sometimes we had them shout words up to me and I'd have to draw them, and that was interesting. But
Was there a pattern in the sort of things that they drew?
Yeah, we did notice that there was some images that came up like quite a bit, like the teardrop shape came up quite a bit, and like this sounds kind of funny, but like people kind of squiggled in the same kind of way, you know. It's like the same kind of, you know, you could see where the pencils were doing the same kind of oval shape, and then it would switch, it would rotate, so it would look like a little X. And, you know, there was a lot of similar images coming out of groups that had no contact, and it was just kind of, it was interesting. And we did try and change the words every so often, so that it wasn't, you know, like the kids would be like, oh, they're going to ask you to draw a dog, like, draw a cat, you know. But
were there some kids that were just fantastic drawers?
Yeah, there was some really good ones, like really good ones, and I was like, oh, competition. There was some people, like kids that you could tell just drew all the time, you know, and you know, and then there's kids who like just don't draw, and it's fine, you know, whatever, but they'd come out with these crazy ideas, and they were class, you know. It's just, they just felt like they just didn't like drawing, and you know, but they still did something, they still did like really unique things, because they were kind of approaching it in a different way, you know. But so then like gave a little talk about like how shapes can be used to, you know, show a feeling or show, convey an idea, you know, like something sharp or dangerous or, you know, like, and so we did that. And then, we kind of, like, the idea was basically, we'd like every piece, every different iteration of the pieces, like the Perspex pieces are different to the screen prints, and the screen prints are different to the sketchbooks. But we'd like a common thread where the, like, hopefully some of the kids would be able to like pinpoint in one of the simpler graphic things, the Perspex pieces, like where that idea came from, because it came from their sketchbook. That was kind of the idea, you know, so hopefully it works.
Yeah, no, I can see how that would actually be really interesting also in terms of taking a step back from your from your work and actually seeing other. What's fantastic about seeing kids illustrate is that sometimes, yeah, like you said, they come up with things that are very surprising. Or, but what I would be curious about is if you actually ask the kids beforehand, like how many of them draw on a regular basis.
We just didn't have time.
Because it would be really interesting to know, you know, when kids kind of stop drawing, I guess. Because I think when you're young enough, everybody kind of draws, but then you stop gradually.
Yes, something happens. We have to pinpoint where that is in their life.
It would be interesting to know, like, how many of them still draw it. You know, age 11, 12, you know.
Like, yeah. I suppose it's hard to say.
Did you, I mean, do you feel like it inspired you to do things differently in your own work or no?
It's still going on. So it's, you know, I don't really know what effect it'll have on my practice, but or my portfolio, say, but it definitely, it was really interesting to, the work that I, like how I responded to their sketchbooks isn't the way that I would usually create work or respond to work. So I found that really interesting. I thought that was, it was a nice change of pace. To have to try and approach this kind of stack of sketchbooks and try and...
What about the teaching, I guess, workshop side of it? Did you enjoy that, or is that something you'd like to do in the future?
I've done a few, and like at the start, in the first few minutes, I'm like, oh God, here we go. So I don't enjoy that part. But once you get going, it's, you can see if people are interested and people aren't. And I would like to do more, but maybe in a different kind of environment. Not the school, but like outside of the commission, just because like maybe getting kids or people who are a little bit more interested in illustration or having a specific project in mind that and more time, I think would be, because it's a shame that they only got to do one day, because there are some of them that were doing like I'd love to see where they'd take these ideas that they were coming up with themselves.
So you'd be interested in seeing that kind of maybe running something a little bit longer.
Because setting them, like getting them going is one thing, but then seeing where they take themselves is kind of will be really interesting. I'd really like to see that, but to develop a workshop specifically for that, I think to encourage that kind of type of work,
It's funny that I you don't see a lot of, well, I don't know if you don't see a lot or I'm just not seeing it, but you don't see a lot of illustrators working with kids. You would think that would be more common. I don't know.
Yeah, like it kind of lends itself to it very, very well.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how many illustrators started drawing when they were adults. I've done a few other different workshops, but they're a handful, and like they always kind of end up in interesting like places in terms of what they're making. So I don't see why anybody wouldn't want to see how that goes, or wouldn't be interested in that process.
Yeah.
But maybe they're just, maybe it's just not a main focus for some people. I mean, it's not exactly a main focus for me, but I've done it since, and it's still interesting.
And
it's good to
get away from commissions. I find it interesting too. I think it's something.
Do you do it yourself?
Interesting. I don't, but I I really like kids, and I also will look after a kid sometimes part time during the week for friends. But it's definitely interesting to see them even starting to draw. I mean, the child I'm talking about is only about like one, and she's already like, you know, doing stuff with crayons.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun to see that.
Yeah, it's cool.
How that just kind of like happens, I guess, and they're really interested in it. So I'd be interested in that. I don't really remember. I think as a kid I did draw, and I definitely painted at some point. But yeah, I don't remember what it felt like, or like the sort of things that you would be thinking about when you were doing that as a kid.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember snippets of like sketches and drawings when I was a kid, you know, and I drew the marshmallow man from Ghostbusters when I was really young. I drew him, and my mother said, oh, that's, yeah, he's the Michelin man. And I was like, yeah, that's close enough. as a child, I was like, that'll do. But I can't remember not drawing as a kid, but you know, like not leaning towards it when, you know, I was bored or whatever. So I can't really.
It's funny. So recently you also did some stuff with the AOI, the I think they're the Association of Illustrators, right?
Yeah,
that's their full title. Yeah. You worked with them on the Not a Hobby campaign, which was their kind of like, it was a campaign that was outlining some of the challenges that illustrators face now, and sort of a calling for illustrators to take the business side of illustration more seriously and to protect themselves. And you did a few illustrations for that campaign.
Is it just one? I did one illustration and made a GIF animation out for it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I didn't have much to do for like involvement in the actual campaign, but it was, I love being a part of it because I think that kind of, you know, that kind of campaign is really important for right now, especially with, you know, where illustration is in terms of, you know, what type of rights clients are asking for, and you know, that kind of stuff, you know, just so there's more knowledge for anybody at any level in illustration to have, so that they can, you know, they can price them to give good prices and understand like more legal terms and more usage rights, like elements of it. Because there's a lot of clients or a lot of emails coming in for rights in perpetuity, and it's, you know, even just
knowing
that's not a standard thing to ask for, or that you have to give. You don't have to give that. It's even just knowing that is plenty. You know, it's
that you can actually just even talk about it.
It's not. Yeah, it's still in the
it's not set in stone.
Yeah, it's a negotiation stage. It's, you know, but yeah.
Do you write your own contracts, or I know the article that the AOI came out with, they asked illustrators to kind of sit down and write a business plan and kind of draft up a standard contract. Is that something you do typically? Or?
I have I've been using, like, the first contract I had was kind of roughly based on something similar to what the AOI gives out, and then
they give out to their members like a kind of a template or a guide.
So it just outlines like usage rights and territories and, you know, kill fees and stuff, cancellation fees. So I basically just use a version of that for everything, like all commissions. And then, you know, sometimes you have to change like the country where the court is, you know, like, you know, where the
right, yeah,
where would be recognized and stuff. But yeah, it's always basically the same template for me anyway.
Yeah, and I personally don't even have that. But I think that's probably a good idea to have a kind of like a basic minimum.
Yeah, because kind
of template. Yeah,
you know, you can always add stuff, or like, I wouldn't recommend taking stuff away, but you know, it's if needs be, then yeah. Just like, it's just for peace of mind. Like, because when I wasn't using them contracts, it, you know, projects could go on a bit too long, you know, they could ask for too many revisions, where it was just, you know, like, it's good to outline it before you actually get started, you know, the terms of, you know, after 3 revisions of a sketch, you know, there might be extra fees, or, you know, just to keep the ball rolling. And, you know, it might make clients look at what feedback they're given to you a little bit more, if, you know, so that it's a little bit more.
If they know they have, if they have a limit of revision rounds, I think the feedback can be more
concise.
They're more careful with it.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be just, oh, would we be able to change that circle to a square?
Yeah.
And change it back.
Yeah.
So, like, I think anything that makes the kind of working relationship clearer between an illustrator and a client is good. You know, it's just clarity is kind of what I aim for, I don't know, with contracts and licensing agreements and stuff, just so we know where we stand.
Yeah.
And then it's just all about the work, the illustration, and, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a number of challenges with writing contracts that a lot of illustrators maybe don't feel comfortable with. Like all the terms, and, you know, a lot of that is kind of intimidating, but also the pricing aspect is something that's kind of shrouded in mystery for a lot of us.
The dark arts.
Especially when you're starting, it's really tough to know what what a reasonable rate is versus not a reasonable rate. Mm. And there's not a unified price for anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors that come into play, you know, with pricing. You know, it's like, even the size of the company or clients, you know,
right,
like, all that kind of comes into play. But yeah, I suppose, like, whatever, start with, like, I kind of tend to start with what I feel comfortable with, and then I start kind of considering it more, you know, like, what would I be.
So you go with your, like, bare minimum kind of thing?
Oh, no, that's where I start.
What I mean. Like, when you're starting out, you're looking first at, like, this is the lowest I'll be able to go. But then you kind of think more about the...
It's not even that. It's what, like, if the price is too low, it might affect the way I approach the work. Maybe I'd be worried about that. So my main thing would be, at the start, would be like, if I'm comfortable with it, and then I'd start considering other things like size of the company, where it is, the usage rights. Like, that's kind of more important for me, like the usage rights.
The usage rights,
Just make that as clear as possible. And if you do, like, for my contracts, I outline everything that's mentioned in relation to the usage rights, just so it's all, you know, it's all there, you know, just so everybody knows what's going on. And then, like, once that's all done, and there's no niggling thoughts in the back of my mind when I'm working, then, you know, I just try and clarify everything before I get started. And for pricing, you kind of get a feel for it, I think.
Yeah. Do you have any resources that you usually use for pricing, or Or I guess, do you talk about it with other illustrators as
yeah,
well?
Like, because I've been doing it for so long now that I just kind of, like...
You kind of have the gist of it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, for editorials, they're, you know, they're pretty standard kind of stuff. And then for...
Yeah.
Like, I tend to, when I'm pricing something, it's, you like, for more commercial project, I tend to work with the usage rights. That's how, where, you know, where my main idea of...
Like, where the main variations
yeah, come that's, from. Yeah, that's kind of where I tend to focus on pricing.
Yeah.
And then I just work back from there, and I just kind of, like, I'd set up prices... Like for 1 year usage rights, 2 year usage rights, or 5 year usage rights for a quote or whatever, you know.
So you usually quote the clients like different kind of scenarios.
Yeah, yeah, just so that they have options, you know. Just to be, just so that they're not coming back and being with any misunderstandings or misconceptions of what'll happen in the future, you know. If it does go ahead.
Do you find that most clients want to pay more for longer usage rights, or that they pick the kind of lower end of that when?
I honestly don't know, if I'm being honest.
Because I definitely find that most people will ask for perpetuity, like rights in perpetuity now, but I don't know if they're willing to pay the actual price for rights in perpetuity, because that is expensive. I mean,
in my experience of those emails asking for rights in perpetuity, they already have a price in mind. Like, I'm not going to say every email I get has it now, but
a lot of them,
But they usually have a price in mind, and it's usually quite low. And
sometimes I don't even know if they really want the rights in perpetuity or just thinking that that's the standard.
Yeah, it's sometimes it I think it feels like they do understand the meaning of it, but sometimes I think it's, you know, the legal department says, you know, rights in perpetuity. Like I had one.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's also a very big, it's like they're not taking it very seriously almost.
It's like, ask the art department instead.
Yeah.
But I usually don't even negotiate with that, to be honest, just because sometimes it's, you know, they know what they're asking for. Like, if I get the feeling that they understand, like, the actual value of rights in perpetuity, and they still and offer still, a price like that, I'm like, that's not for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's But at the same time, like, I have to go at it from a place, like empathy, you know? It's like, some people just don't know, like...
What they're asking.
Because... Like, it's hard enough for an illustrator to do pricing, you know, so, like, how does somebody who work in the industry approach it, you know? It's, like, they might have just been told, all rights in perpetuity. Oh, yeah, I'll give you this for rights in perpetuity. And you just have to just say, this would be the usual fee for 1 year usage, 2 year usage. Like, I do think it is important to kind of push... Like say with the AOI and campaign, pushing that idea that as illustrators we do kind of have to regulate it in some kind of way, in terms of not always just going you can have rights in perpetuity
kind of protect the general kind of idea of illustration
that's a really good campaign. That's I was really proud to be a part of that. In a small way, you know, but
Well, I think we're almost at the end of the time, but I have a few quick questions that I like to ask in the end. So my first question I had for you was, what are your favorite art books? And when I say art books, I don't mean like you know, formal art books or anything. It could be comics, you know, comic or books or anything that has like really images or things that inspire you visually. It could even not have images, I guess.
Like I'm looking up at my bookshelf. It's quite sparse. I find myself going back to that book, Art as Design. I can't remember what's the Italian.
What is it?
Art as Design. Hang on, I'll get it there.
Oh,
what's his name?
Is it the Bruno?
Yeah, that's the boy. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I have that. I
is it maybe Design as Art? I don't.
It's one or the other.
Yeah, it's a kind of theoretical kind of.
Yeah, it's a collection of articles that he did for Design Quarterly or something, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out the name. Is it? I think it's Bruno Monari. Monari.
Yeah.
Design as Art.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I like that one, and I do still look at comics. Like I used to read comics. Like I love the style of the Hellboy books.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I just really like his art, like his artistic style. And then
so you read a lot of like these kind of like classic hero superhero kind of American comics?
No. Just I bought those when I was in secondary school and high school. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of myths and stuff in them. Like there's, you know, he gets bases a lot of his stories on like local myths in other countries. And I always like that. But it's mm-hmm. kind of more the style kind of,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And Ways of Seeing by John Berger. I read that for college.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Do you draw like visual references from, you don't see from books or from maybe like Pinterest or
for actual work?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it needs be, I do. But like the majority of the time I just tend to draw characters and people, and it's, you know, I'd be kind of basing it on people that I see on the street or, you know, on public transport or something like that, you know, just seeing the way people stand and, you know, exaggerating those things. So I wouldn't, because I was looking through my work before I got on the podcast, like, what do I do again? and
forget.
Yeah. I think I draw. And I was looking through all my, Instagram posts, and I was like, oh, there's mostly people, so I don't if I need to like I don't think I could draw a car without actually having a picture of a car in front of me,
so I guess you get inspired from life more
and then just kind of exaggerating it and abstracting it, just seeing what shapes I can make out of the people, you know, and what I can kind of express, what kind of, like I try and like I don't try, but I, you know, I imagine what they're feeling and then I try and show it through their body, I suppose, and their shapes and stuff. But I don't really use photo references because I don't really draw that many objects, I suppose.
But I mean, you could also be referring to people who I guess influence you. And that was one of my other questions. It's what are your main influences, you know, past or current, you know?
I suppose, like, as I said at the start, like, there'd be a lot of stuff that I wouldn't realize had an effect on me, like the game boxes and stuff, like, just for colors. And I just played around with shape and then inspirations, I suppose. Yeah, I try not to look at that many illustrators just because I'd be worried about, you know, inadvertently soaking stuff in, you know. But, like,
I suppose there'd be a lot of films, you know, that I try and not directly get inspired by, but, you know, they'd have an effect on how I approach my work.
Yeah.
You know, like, because I kind of try and keep away from looking at illustration for inspiration in general, just because I think getting as many different forms of inspiration, I suppose, probably important.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
I find, and so yeah, films like what's that film? In the Mood for Love.
Oh yeah.
You know, that, like, just the colors and the framing and the blocking in that, you know,
yeah,
like compositionally, I think I'd get a lot of inspiration by something like that, you know, but not aesthetically in terms of like how I draw, but where I place characters and what I think this can be said, what I think that film is saying with the framing and blocking, I try and incorporate into my approach, but and not just that film, but, like, you know, that would be kind of something that I'd look at.
What are your favorite films or movies that you since you mentioned that
In the Mood for Love There Will Be Blood. I like any film with the director of photography is Roger Deakins, or is it Richard or Roger Deakins?
I don't know, but I'll look that up. Yeah,
yeah, he's like, he did Sicario, and, you know, he trained as a, or he, I think he trained as a photographer, like, so that was his passion, a black and white photography. So all his shots are, like, gorgeous, you know, and they're all saying something about the character and the narrative. So yeah, any film with him. I think he works a lot with the Coen brothers as well.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, There Will Be Blood is a Coen brother film, right?
No, that's No Country for Old Men.
Oh, okay.
There Will Be Blood is Anderson. Paul Thomas Anderson.
I'm confusing it with that one.
Yeah, they're very similar, you know. But I think he might have actually been the director of photography for both films.
Oh.
Maybe.
That might, yeah, okay. But, I'll check on that.
But yeah, those kind of films.
Do you have a favorite pen?
Oh, I might have to move to find the name of it. The one I'm using now is UniPen. Fine Line.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Those kind of felt tip pens are what I mostly work with.
My last question is, what's the worst thing about being an illustrator?
There's so many. I don't know. Sometimes I get strains on my hands from
you do.
Yeah. Was it tendonitis? Or
Yeah.
But yeah, quiet periods as well.
It's a dangerous job.
Yeah. Like any period where there's no work is
torture. Yeah.
It's just like, now what do I do?
Yeah.
But so those two things. Sore hands and quiet periods.
And I guess I didn't ask you this before. It's not exactly a quick question, but what advice would you give people who are starting out, if you could give them advice, you know, directly? And it doesn't have to be revolutionary.
I wouldn't be too comfortable about telling people how to do work on their style or their actual illustration. But, like,
In
terms of actually working in illustration, I think just learn about usage rights and contracts and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, if you're like accounts and stuff, just get used to the business side of it, because it is an aspect of it. It's that you just have to do. And the more organized you are at it, then the less time it takes up and the more time you have to work, like, do proper work, you know. So that would be my advice, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think that's helpful. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
It was really great talking to you.
Yeah, great talking to you too.
And that was my conversation with Cathal Duan. And please think about submitting your questions, any questions you have about contracts, representation, and the business of illustration for my episode with Matthew LeBaron coming up. Once again, you can submit your questions through Instagram at IllustrationHour or via email by writing to illustrationhourpodcast@gmail.com with the subject line Q&A. That's it for me this week. Thank you once again for joining me, and I will see you next week on the Illustration Hour.